This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Real Racing USA. It must be Tuesday night. We're here at the Real Racing USA studios. And the Winter Nationals are finally over, Jack. What a month it's been, man. People having their ups and downs. But the biggest news this week, Ryan Newman. Nobody expected that one.
An awesome conclusion. You called it the Winter Nationals. I call it Speed Weeks.
Speed Weeks, Winter Still. Nationals. Yeah, NASCAR's got me a little edgy about using their word. You know, they've got the trademark on their word.
Well, I got to say, you know, I watched the opening of the Nasty Car deal, and I watched the conclusion of it. I didn't see too much in between. But they had a pretty good show.
It was a decent show. I had to work. I had to work for the whole day. Four-inch screen, black and white TV that I watched it on. I did watch a lot of the replays of it on Speed and on ESPN and stuff. And I mean, the race looked good. A lot of racing, slicing and dicing and stuff. None of the big ones in there. But in all reality, to me, the car of tomorrow is boring.
You know, I was showing Kathy. I said, "Look at those cars in the opening, right in the beginning."
Yeah.
I said, "Look at them cars." They're showing close-ups of them and stuff as the race is getting started. She didn't like them either. That's the first time she'd ever noticed.
They're ugly.
Yeah.
They're flat-out ugly.
How do you tell the difference between one and the other?
You don't.
Paint schemes, huh?
Paint schemes, I guess.
That's what she kept saying. She kept saying, boy, they really have to do some work on the graphics with those cars because they all look the same.
Well, I guess it's the templates that makes it easier. They don't have to buy a bunch of templates, I guess, because they're all pretty much the same. Kicked off the Real Racing USA Black Flag Fantasy NASCAR League this week. Fat Man Racing was your high scorer this week. I came in second with 328 points. We got 24 teams signed up for that.
You got a horse in your own race?
Oh yeah, I always got a horse in my own race. It's run.
Is it promoters? That's something like promoters aren't supposed to do.
It's like a track owner with an open wheel modified.
I didn't think you were supposed to do that.
Actually, the promoters.
Is this being sponsored by Real Racing USA? Did we come around to that?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yeah, we settled that.
Okay.
Real Racing USA, Black Flag, FloridaBlackFlag.com. Every week, I'll post the results. It's a weekly deal. It's actually run by Yahoo, so you can't cheat it up. There's no place to put traction control on it.
Is it closed now? Everybody's already in?
Everybody's already in. Mm, okay. 24 competitors for the season.
Interesting. And where are these folks from? Are they from mostly around all over the country?
All over the country.
Really?
All over the place. Yeah, they just what they did, they sent me an email, and then I sent them an email back. They signed up, and Yahoo takes over from there.
Mm. Do they get a small version of the Sprint Cup, the winner or something? The Sprint Cup.
The Sprint Cup. I haven't given a trophy out yet on this deal. But
I will say it again. The cup should be named the Dale Earnhardt Cup.
The Dale Earnhardt Senior Cup.
That's right.
Not to confuse it with the Junior Cup.
It should be named after a famous race car driver or a famous somebody. But it should not be. I mean, it's just silly. It's silly.
Got some great guests lined up tonight. One thing I do want to talk about, and I was really upset that I couldn't make it, the Modify reunion, man. That thing really, really took off this year.
Yeah, that was at New Smyrna Speedway over there where they were having the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing. And a little later in the second hour, we're going to talk to Marty Little, who is, of course, a well-known motorsports writer and spokesman and historian. Everybody knows him. He's the history man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and he's going to talk. He was there, and we'll talk to him a little bit about that.
And congratulations to Jerry Benner putting that event together. And Jerry really found out what it's like to deal with racetracks, and have one of these events put together. It's not as easy as it seems. You know, that like we did the Sunshine Reunion thing. We didn't have to depend on a racetrack for that one. That racetrack is already closed.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, you know, it's like I told Jerry. You know, racetracks, and in their defense, the racetracks are set up to run races, and these kinds of events, they're not. It's not part of their routine deal. And you know, especially in something as big as Speed Weeks, so you're going to have little things pop up here and there. And I think overall, that was, I would say, a 99.5% success deal over there, man. And it was pretty interesting from my perspective because I was a completely outsider of the whole thing. I didn't really know the guys. The older guys had been racing years and years ago. You know, it was pretty fascinating to see that all come together, though. It was interesting, man.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah, it sounded interesting. Of course, you can listen to that. Go to realracingusa.com. It's up there on the links. You can listen to the replay of that. Just like you can listen to any one of our shows, including the old Sunshine Reunion show and the Bithlow Summit. All that stuff's up there on realracingusa.com. Not hard to find. Of course, we got the fan forums there. You can go up, just sign up, and post your mind away. Just don't get overexcited about it.
Flaming.
No flaming.
Yeah. We should also, this is who we have tonight lined up. We have, we're going to talk to Jeff Choquette, who he just can't seem to stay out of the news. It's unbelievable, man. He went over there to the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing at New Smyrna. And Tim Russell started off night one winning. But after that, man, it was all Jeff. I mean, he just blew him away.
I'm telling you, man.
And driving his own car. And we're also going to talk to Jim Hanks. And Jim Hanks is the owner of MustSeeRacing.com. They videotaped six nights
is plenty.
Yeah, six or seven nights.
Six or seven nights is plenty. I mean, that's a lot of work. Yeah, a lot of work. I'm interested to see get his feelings on how he thought it was going to be going into it and what it finally came to.
And you know, they were completely unfamiliar with New Smyrna Speedway. And pretty unfamiliar with that type of like late model racing. I mean, they're sprint car people, you know.
Right.
So they did get to do the TBARA sprint car. They filmed that. And as a matter of fact, we have probably a pretty interesting little announcement coming up when Jim's coming on because they're going to start marketing them videos. As a matter of fact,
cool deal.
Then we're going drag racing. Valerie Thompson.
Valerie's a regular guest here on the show.
This will be her third time.
Third time on Real Racing USA Live. She's hitting the big leagues, man. I mean, not that she hasn't been in the big leagues, but she's going up to pro stock bikes.
Yeah, one of the top all Harley drag racers, and of course with the GoDaddy sponsorship and doing the commercials and all that sort of stuff. And now she's going to the NHRA,
Powerade Drag Racing.
Yeah, and. Now, we have this situation with this environmental stuff, you know, with the gasoline. And, Rick, you probably know a whole lot more about this.
Well,
tonight.
You know, Jack, I've
leaded been, and unleaded gasoline.
I've been reading up on this, and I can remember back when we went to unleaded gasoline, the same things were being said, because that was when I was back into drag racing, and they were saying the same things back then, that they were going to cut off all the leaded fuels and all that. But that was pre-Al Gore days.
That's right.
You know, so
that's right.
So it's a whole different ball game now. I mean, you know, switching these cars over to unleaded fuels.
Well, it was also a whole lot less people on planet Earth.
Yes,
20
it
years
was.
Ago, and China hadn't gotten into the big time with using oil. So
yeah,
there's a lot of that too. But in Canada, it's come down to they've been operating on an extension from the government, allowing them to continue to use leaded fuels. And they are saying now that the government is ready to close that loophole and force leaded fuels out of the game. And we're going to talk to Neil Armstrong, not the Neil Armstrong who went to the moon. I'd like to talk to him.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
But Neil Armstrong, who is the, I believe his title is the race director up at Toronto Motor Speedway, and Toronto Motor Speedway has been very, the organization there has been very active in dealing with this issue, and it's coming down to there's going to be some major changes have to happen, and these things are going to eventually hit the United States. And I
is
don't,
that Motor Speedway or Motorsports Park?
Is it Motorsports Park?
I believe
yeah,
it's
it
Motorsports
is. It's
Park.
Motorsports Park, yes.
Yeah, that's a big place. It's a drag strip, a road course.
Yep.
It's a huge place.
Yes, and so we're going to talk to Neil Armstrong about that. And as a matter of fact, we're actually doing a follow-up on Stevie LaTemp, who does the Straight Line and with Stevie show on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, broke this like last week about the deal with Canada's politicians getting ready to make this big change and slam that door shut. And,
it's an article on the blog on realracingusa.com about that.
Yeah. And so we're going to talk to Neil Armstrong about that. And the Arkansas dirt late model scene is coming back here again tonight. We're going to talk to the promoter, Christy Hudson, who is probably, I'll tell you what, she is definitely as energetic a race promoter as there is in America right now.
Well, if you listen to her drivers, she is the promoter. She is the game.
Yep.
She knows how to do it. She gets the drivers in there. We need to get a few of these tracks that are running her series and see how she approaches them bringing the series in and how they benefit from it. But I'm sure they do because, I mean, she's a ball of fire, man.
Yeah, and she has the AMP Dirt Late Model Series out there in Arkansas is the name of the series, and we're going to talk to Christy. But we're also going to talk to – they have some new drivers coming into that series this year, and we spoke with one of them last week, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, Rachel York, we're going to try to squeeze in Rachel York later in the show. She is the first female driver to go into this series. And then we're going to get back with Skip Wall. And Skip's favorite topic of late has been the USAR Hooters Pro Cup. And what Skip, I don't know if this would be putting words into his mouth, but they need to shape up is kind of what Skip has been writing about.
Apparently so.
And we're going to talk to one of the drivers, Lonnie Rush, who's been racing in that series in the North Division since 2001. And Lonnie is a businessman, and he's got quite a bit to say about the Hooters Pro Cup. And it's going to be interesting, no doubt.
Good
we spoke
deal.
A little bit this afternoon about that. But so did you have some other news items, Rick?
We pretty much covered them with the with Jayski and you know Dodge coming alive and winning the Daytona 500 first time in years. Tony Stewart was lined up to win that bad boy, but made a mistake. And
what exactly did he do wrong there? I mean, I couldn't.
They said, well,
I mean, I watched
one
it
of the
happen,
things about the about Daytona is it's about the draft,
right.
Okay. And what the Jeff Gordon said it better than anybody I've ever heard say it before the race started. You don't want to be leading on that last lap.
Yeah.
And he picked the wrong person to
try and drive. He jumped, you know, on the restart, yep. He was in fourth, and he quickly, like instantly, was in first place. You know?
Yep.
And but halfway through the last lap,
yep.
You could see that this door was getting closed.
Yeah, and when you know, Kurt Busch said that if he'd have had the opportunity, he'd have went to the outside and gone for the win. But he saw Ryan Newman, his teammate, lined up behind him and just pushed him to the front. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we go to a break and we'll come back and start talking to some of these guests. And see
all right.
What, all right.
Real Racing USA, Tuesday night. We'll be right back.
Presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
When conventional wisdom said no one could make a hot dog longer than 6 inches, you dared to dream.
Dared to dream.
You knew the limitations of a regular size hot dog bun, and you ignored them.
Can't stop me now.
You made a 10-inch wiener, and people cheered. But you weren't satisfied. You said, wait, I think I can still give you 2 more inches. And so the footlong was born. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Hot Dog Hero, because you gave every single one of us our fondest wish, a bigger wiener.
Thank you.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, this is David Stremme, driver of the Atrius Holmes number 64 car for Rusty Wallace. And you're listening to Real Racing USA with Jack Smith and Rick Angies.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
We're back live on Real Racing USA, and with us right now,
live from the mall.
Live from the mall is a guy that I did. It's only February, Jack, and he's got more wins than most people get in a whole season. Jeff Choquette. Jeffrey, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good. We had to come to the mall to get some birthday presents for some people. So I'm down here in Tampa at the mall. But I'm, other than that, even though I don't want to be here, but I'm doing good.
You're right out there spending all that money you made all of this over the last 9 days.
That was already well spent way before we even got there.
Now, Jeff, I interviewed you up at Lakeland when you won that Friday night race, and you had to correct me that that was not your first win of the season. You'd already won one in the dirt. You're just on a roll, man. What does it feel like to be doing this well this early in the season?
It feels like, you know, I always say I'd rather be lucky than good any day. And, I just hope the luck don't run out anytime soon. So, but you know, it feels really good. And then I knew we all week long, you know, we'd have a pretty good car there in New Smyrna. I just didn't expect it to turn out that well, and it was awesome. You know, I got to thank my guys for helping me. Dennis Reno from Extreme Suspension Technology and Ryan, you know, was our help throughout the week, and especially Guaranteed Concrete and Haines City Car Care for coming on during the week.
Now, Jeff, I watched the results all during the week, and every qualifying run, the car got progressively faster. Tell us a little bit about that.
A little bit of it had to do with the track, and us just like really changing the car, fine tuning it to the track. You know, the first day when we got there, we got our other car out, which, you know, it seems like it was the car that was off, but it really wasn't. It was really our setup. And then something happened with the motor, and all the work that we did on that one car transferred over to the car that we ran at Lakeland. And, you know, that's really where, you know, it wasn't that we just got that car out and started running good with it. It was all the work that we did on the car before that, and, you know, all that hard work that we put into it really, really helped the car from Lakeland out.
Now, when I was announcing it to DeSoto, and you got into that little altercation with Yoho down there, and you crashed your primary car. You said you felt like you'd lost your best friend. Does it feel like you got your best friend back?
I feel like I got about 10 best friends back. I mean, that car down there, that was an awesome race car. Like I said, it was probably one of the best I had, but this one hasn't been through the full test yet, but that car went from New Smyrna, DeSoto, Lake. I mean, that car ran everywhere, and this car seems to have twice the potential that car had, and you know, just hopefully, you know, we could take it everywhere else and run just as good with it.
You know, Rick, when I talked to Don Nerone earlier in the day on Saturday, prior to the 100-lap Pedor Memorial race, and he said, not to worry, nobody's going to touch Jeff. And there it was, 3 or 4 hours later, Jeff's in the winner's circle. He's saying, enough with the pictures already.
I said, there's no way these guys can use all these pictures. But I'm more than happy to take them. You know, I don't, anytime you're in there and they're taking your picture a lot, you know, that's a good thing to have. But it was, they're talking about the Hunter Lapper, you know, the 36 was actually better than I was there towards the end of the race. You know, we got a really long green run, and I think we're closing in on about 80 to go. Oh, not 80 to go, about 20 to go on lap 80. And he was actually, like, assuming the rearview mirror catching me. But he was actually a little bit faster than me. But, you know, all week long we've been running 30 lappers, so that's kind of where our car was. And, you know, we had a little bit of fine-tuning to do for the Hunter Lapper, but I believe, you know, with the next Hunter Lapper that came along, we'd be a lot more prepared for it.
Yeah, he was definitely catching. I was watching that very closely, and he was gaining a little bit every lap. And then when the cautions came out, of course, he couldn't do it coming off of the restarts.
Yeah, we were a little bit better than he was on the restarts. And Timmy Russell is just, I mean, an awesome restarter. You know, every time he's behind you, you know, you always got to make sure you're changing your restarts up and that, you know, you change them up so he can't read you, because as soon as he reads you, you know, and if you got to have a little bit of room going there off in the turn one, so you have a case you mess up so he doesn't get underneath you. But I kept changing my restarts up, and even on the short runs we were a little bit better than he was. But, you know, like I said, I'd rather be lucky any day than good, you know. And everything this week kind of fell our way with the cautions from the 50 lapper to the cautions in the 100 lapper, and, you know, the way that all the inversions went, everything kind of went our way this week, and I couldn't be more thankful for it.
So, Rick, go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, you know, luck is good, Jeff, but when you're good, you're good. And you made that Cup driver, Kyle Busch, get up on the wheel, and he couldn't get around you up there at Lakeland. That had to be really special.
Yeah, that, you know, to see him running that Daytona and leading the race, I mean, even though, you know, I know that's a totally different ball game there, the whole drafting game and stuff, but it's just like, you know, kind of cool. You know, hey, over in Lakeland, he was running with us, and he was running behind me, you know, and now he's leading the Daytona 500. So it was kind of cool to see that. And, you know, even though I know, like I said, it's a totally different game over there with the whole drafting and the COT cars and stuff, but that was pretty cool. And, you know, I hope I get to run some more races and race against him. So.
How do you think you could handle that? How do you feel about all that?
What? Like as far as the drafting?
Yeah, getting out there running with them big boys.
I, you know, I would like to. I've never had my chance to really go over there and, you know, just see how it is. I mean, you know, any sport you go into or any level of racing you go into, there's always a set of, you know, big dogs or really good people in there. And, you know, you always got to compete against some people. Just like he came over and ran against the Super Late Models, well, he had to compete against, you know, everybody that was good in our Super Late Model rank. So I know it's a lot harder, but I don't see how, you know, if you run up front every level you go up to, I don't see how that could be too much harder. But, you know, everybody that's a good race car driver that goes in there, you know, they always seem to struggle the first couple years. So I'd like to have a chance to go up there and see if I could, you know, run with them. But, you know, I have to wait for that chance.
You know, one of the fondest memories I have of Jeff is a 16, 17-year-old kid coming up the East Bay during the Winter Nationals against Blomqvist and Moyer and all them guys. You barely made the field. You ended up with a promoter's choice because you did so well in all the races during the week, and you were just moving up through the field until you got that flat tire. And I said, man, this guy's going to be something. You remember that, Jeff?
Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday. We were good buddies with Al Vonador and them, and the Vonadors are great people. And you know, I didn't make the show. I don't know how much I missed it by, but I didn't make it in. And I was waiting around there because I'm like, you know, who else can get the promoter's choice? I'm here every week. You know, I have to be able to get it. You know, Schrader and all the big names are in the field. I was like, you know, and then he come over and he said, you know, I wouldn't do this normally, but since it's you, he said, I'll put you in the field. And you know, I'm glad he did because we got the Hard Charger Award. I remember it was 27th to 7th. I remember it was 20 positions. And passing Blomqvist, that was another claim to fame of mine, you know. there ain't very many people out there get to say they passed Blomqvist, and we got to pass him, and we ended up finishing seventh, which was a good night.
No doubt about it.
So, Rick, you think he's going to take his new favorite car to South Alabama Speedway in the Rattler?
You going up there, Jeff?
No, we're going to the race, but we're going to take the guaranteed concrete cars. The black one and the red one. We're going to go up there with their team, and I heard it's a wreck fest, so I was kind of scared to take mine. But no, we decided to take both of their cars because they have a Brandon Hamke, which is probably just as good as my car that I ran over in Lakeland and New Smyrna. So we're going to take both of theirs up there.
Right. You know what Jeff Chilcat reminds me of? Is Dick Anderson, man. Everybody wanted Dickie in his car. Now, Jeff, everybody wants you in their car.
That's the funny thing because, I've heard a couple of times that, I drove a little bit like Dick. Not quite as good as Dick, but drove a little bit like him, at Lake City there a couple of times. And on the outside of New Smyrna, they said, Dick, anytime he gets to somebody, he would just go to the outside of them because they were always holding the bottom. And, now I'm driving Dickie's car and which is always fun. Actually, I was at his shop today working on his car because we're going to run Bradenton with him, the icebreaker, this weekend.
Cool deal. And one thing that I do have a claim to fame for is I called your first asphalt late model win.
That was in DeSoto, yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
And we're going to have to let you go, Jeff. Just to remind you, your plaque's in the mail.
All righty. Thank you again for the reward, and I look forward to talking to you guys again.
All right, Jeff Chilcat, man. Good talk to you later. Good luck this weekend, brother.
All righty. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Man, Jeff Chilcat, he won so much. I he's got to have like 6-7 wins already this year, one of them on the dirt. Of course, we got Ocala coming up in a couple weeks, and he's supposed to be he's going to try and make that one. We got the Rattler coming up. He's going to go do that one. What do I got here? I got something else here I wanted to talk about. This weekend up at this past weekend at DeSoto, man, TBRA, Lenny Pelliglio, and those guys, man, put on one hell of a show. 22 cars showed up. 20 started the feature. Dave Steele starting about mid-pack. Once again, this guy had them on their feet. Just when it looked like it couldn't be done, he did it coming out of turn number four. The article's on the front page of Karnak.com. You want to read that. Dave Steele, again, got that DeSoto Speedway figured out, kind of like Jeff Chilcat.
Well, let's go back to New Smyrna again, the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing. And a few weeks ago, Rick, you'll remember we talked with Jim Hanks from MustSeeRacing.com.
Uh-huh.
They were going to go down there and do some video work and test some stuff out, and they did. Let's see. Jim Hanks, welcome back to Real Racing USA Live.
Jack, how you doing?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good, man. You still, I understand you're still staying down here enjoying this Florida winter weather.
I am. I'm down by Osprey right now, staying at a friend's house. I understand in Michigan it was 12 degrees this morning, so I might stay down here for quite a little while.
Yeah, Osprey is just down there around Venice, Florida, a really nice place, not too far from us, as a matter of fact. But
right.
What? Tell us about your adventure at New Smyrna. You were there for 2 weeks, practically.
We had a great time. That was our first event, and such a different perspective of racing. I'm used to running our race team, the Spring Cars and the Silver Crown teams from the pits, and been around it a long time, and this gave us an opportunity to get on the other side of the racetrack with the fans, up in the stands, doing interview in the pits, and I got to tell you, we absolutely had a great time there.
Let me ask you, was it everything you thought it would be?
It was that and more. What a great event. I mean, that 42nd annual World Series of Stock Car Racing with the seven divisions. And being an open wheel guy, of course, I was familiar with the other divisions. But we really got an education, and we think we were able to pass that along to the people watching Must See Racing. what the differences are between like a straight rail ASA late model and a late model and, of course, a super late model. And, you know, we just had a wonderful time talking to the teams and the crew chief and, of course, the drivers. And, you know, the competition there was outstanding. I mean, we had the opportunity to spend time with young Logan Ruffin. I mean, here's a 13-year-old kid that is a terrific race car driver, and he's wise past his years. I mean, that young man is almost disarming when you sit down and talk to him. I mean, his maturity and his dad that helps him and his whole crew, I mean, it was just, it was really something to see. And, of course, Tom Bigelow is with us at Must See Racing, and Tom has, you know, untold experience, and he was very impressed with the young man. And, you know, you guys are familiar with Jeff Choquette, and he's pretty new to us. You know, we spent time with him, had an in-car camera there, and watched him race. And, you know, there's a guy in a division that's very tough division that's normally very hard to pass. And, you know, that kid was in his own zip code the whole event. I mean, just outstanding. You know, great team, great equipment, and just a great race car driver. And then, you know, we spent time over there with Ricky Carmichael. And that was just as interesting as it gets. I mean, here's the greatest motocross rider of all time converting over to stock car racing, and his owner there, Dick Anderson, I think it was, terrific people. And then one night, Ricky's buddy Juan Pablo Montoya stopped by, and we interviewed him, and, you know, we got all this stuff on our telecast. And the racing, you know, the Tour Modifieds, and the car, I really like those cars. I mean, I certainly know more about them now than I did, but those are fast race cars. And young Jimmy Blewett won the memorial honoring his brother John at a very close race. I mean, that was an emotional time. It was just terrific. And then Eric Beers won the Richie Evans Memorial. And as much as we've raced down here, you know, I didn't, you know, I knew it was an important race and, you know, well-attended and all that, but that was a big deal. You know, they introduced all the drivers and the fans were into it. Yeah, it was just, it was fantastic. One night we had a lady contact us by phone from Scotland and wanted to see how she went about getting our telecast through MustSeeRacing.com to watch her son, Gordon Moody, who is that guest driver over here from Scotland. I understand he's got a big name over there. So, I mean, I can go on and on and on. It was a great event. It was a terrific competition. You know, we really enjoyed our chance to meet the drivers and the teams, do the interviews, you know, get out the people watching Must See Racing up close and personal, and the racetrack and the personnel there. And, you know, particularly Terry Roberts, the manager of the racetrack, we just couldn't have possibly been treated better anywhere. It was just a great, great experience.
Rick, sounds like you had a good time.
Sounds like it did to me. How was it received, Jim? I mean, how did you do as far as people watching it?
Well, you know, what we're doing is, you know, I had told Jack at the racetrack where I saw you there, Jack, that, you know, we wanted to get an awareness of MustSeeRacing.com, but we were careful not to really try to sell this thing because this was our first event. And, you know, we prefer to say here's what we've done rather than here's what we're going to do. And I was really amazed, and I mean amazed, at the people that stopped by. We had a little display tent there, you know, to chat with people on how many people were aware of MustSeeRacing.com. And, of course, we followed our emails very carefully. In fact, what we're trying to do is really personalize our service. You know, if somebody's got a question, they email us, we're going to answer it right away. The whole concept by the racing community just seems to be very, very well accepted, and we're very, very pleased. You know, another thing about that side of the racetrack I'm not used to, talking to Terry Roberts, I said, my gosh, I'm exhausted and all we're doing is taking pictures of you doing the work. That is a grueling week, I got to tell you.
Yeah, you know, it's like that down here at New Smyrna Speedway and East Bay Raceway Park in Volusia. I mean, they just, for the better part of the month, I mean, they're involved in putting on shows. And how the staffs are able to do it. Rick's been involved a little bit in that game.
It's not an easy game, but, I mean, it's amazing how you can be part of that team and just – continue to go day after day after day after day.
Well, you know, it's racing is a passion with all of us. You know, whether you're participating on a race team or this new experience for us trying to bring it to the fans and the other teams, you know, you just keep going because it's such an exciting thing. And you know, to be honest with you, our very first night, our telecast, we had some technical problems there. We're not trying to make excuses, but about everything that could have happened did, and it was pretty good. And all our other nights that we put out, you know, we had great racing, and, you know, that's our product. And, of course, the stars and the cars produced that. But we did get some wonderful interviews. Like I say, we got Juan Pablo Montoya. You know, we got on film the Busch kid, Nat Kurt, his brother Kyle, wrecking his car and racing there, and it was terrific. And you know what? The bottom line for what we're trying to do here, and we talked about the first time, we're trying to get the race fan up close and personal to what it really is to be involved with racing, and bring them the real deal. And you know, I think we come close to accomplishing that. And there's a lot to see, a lot of interesting things to see. And, you know, we had six nights where we had featured races each night, where we had the interviews, where we had the in-car cameras. There's a tremendous amount of racing on that. And, we're pleased.
Now, the video that's available, I mean, it includes not just, it also includes like TBARA sprints, right?
Sure, sure. On our website, when you go to our website, when you look on the schedule page, it shows the two events that we featured each night. Like the first night, and I'm going from memory because I don't have my notes in front of me, but it was the sprint, TBARA sprint, and I think the super late model race. And then Monday night, it was the sprint cars and another one. Of course, we got the John Blewett Memorial. We got the Richie Evans Memorial. We got the modified SK50. You know, we got all the highlighted races that were highlighted by the racetrack themselves. It's a tremendous amount of racing. It's a lot of interviews. Just a lot of interesting things.
So now people can go onto the video, the website mustseeracing.com, and you have the video clips there, and you can also order videos from the website.
Absolutely. What you do is you go to mustseeracing.com and you need to become a member to purchase anything. And membership is free. And what you get for free now and forever is you have access to our driver profile sheet that's got drivers from across the country with the information about themselves, photographs, videos of them. The other thing they get to see is what we call our racing reality, which we're just going to start when I return to Michigan following our race team with Kevin Feeney as the driver, our sprint car team, building a car in the shop, on the road, at the track, and we're going to have guests involved with that. But that's all for free for our members. And any member who wants to see any of the races at New Smyrna, they can follow the instructions, and you can buy any particular night for $7.99, or you can buy the entire event for $39.99 on the internet. So you can have that, and that's there on your computer forever. Or we have an option where you can buy the entire event. In other words, the races, the interviews in the pits, we call it, and the in-car cameras for $49.99 plus shipping.
right.
And, you know, one of the things I was happy about, and we're getting very good feedback, and I'd like your opinion, Jack. Our shot of the race itself shows the cars coming down the straightaway, leaving the corner, goes to the tower. Then you get a shot from the in-car camera. It's pretty much like a TV production. And that's the one screen you get. That's what we call the race. And that's start to finish of the race. Shows who starts in the race, the lineup, and it shows the finish. And the race is in their entirety. And our second screen we call the driver's view. It's got one or two cars in each race where it takes you right the entire length of the race, right from the start right to the finish from the in-car camera view.
Wow.
And, of course, our third screen is what we call in the pit, and that's the interviews. I mean, we got Jeff Choquette. We got that little chat that Tom Bigelow had with Juan Pablo Montoya. In fact, Tom Bigelow is in the Sprint Car Hall of Fame, Midget Hall of Fame, and been in 9 Indianapolis 500. I mean, he's a racer, and so am I. And what we try to do is talk to these drivers and their crew chiefs and their owners and, you know, about what are you doing here? And, you know, we got some great information. We got the up-close shot.
Well, Jim, you know, what you might want to do is let Jack and I get a copy of this so we can critique it. I mean, we've been doing racing down here for a long time, late model street stocks, the whole deal, and we'll let you know what we think.
Well, I'd appreciate that, and I can tell you, everybody that has purchased from us already, you know, they've had comments, and they overwhelmingly got a great response. In fact, we've really not had anybody make a complaint. We're all ears when it comes to ideas to improve.
Yeah, what I saw at the little bit that I've been able to see so far, I'll tell you, I thought it was pretty good. And I talked to Greg, your partner, this afternoon, and it looks like here in the next few days we'll be available all over Real Racing USA and Carnac.com, where you can there'll be plenty of links where you can click on this thing to go find out more and purchase the videos I from what I saw, Jim, you're on to something.
I think so.
Well, we do, and you know, we're in this for the long haul. I mean, this is a full time profession with us now. You know, we are racers. We're not computer people. My partner Greg is an expert with websites and computers, but you know, we're trying to bring it everything on our telecast based on what's interesting to the fans and what's factual to the drivers and the teams. And we really couldn't have been happier with the way we were received in New Smyrna. I mean, it was like, well, I told Terry Roberts, you know, this is our first event, and that means New Smyrna and the World Series of Stock Car Racing is going to be our home. And I'm looking forward to coming back next year and having all the fun we did this year.
All right, very cool. All right, Jim, let you get back to your relaxation down here in the Sunshine State, and we'll be talking to you again really, really soon. And, man, keep up the good work.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, one thing that I did forget to mention is, you know, I want to let everybody out there know that, you know, we are a faith-based operation, and we always try to do good things when we can, and our entire event we're making available to our military in the Middle East, Afghanistan, and Iraq for free. And we feel pretty good about that, and we think that's going to be a good thing for our servicemen.
Awesome. Absolutely. Awesome.
All right, Jim. Good deal, man. Thank you, and we will talk to you again real soon.
You got a deal. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jim. One thing I did want to mention, Jack, this past week has been a rough one for racing. Frank Firestein. Jeff Firestein's dad, of course, passed away. We talked about it a little bit last week. But Dennis Boyd, Jason Boyd's father, passed away this week. And
pretty well-known engine builder around
Boyd,
the southern
Boyd
United
Racing
States.
Motors, yeah. Yep. Condolences to the family. Jason and Jordan, our thoughts are with you. That's a tough one.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rick, we're going to take a break here. And we're going to come back with Valerie Thompson. Talk about some drag racing.
Go, go, daddy.
Motorcycles.
This is Logan Ruffin, driver of the Torco Chevrolet Monte Carlo on O'Reilly ASA Fastlane on Real Racing USA.
CarNet.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarNet.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarNet.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, CarNet gets it done.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Never in the history of cinema have so many done so little for so many.
You're a star.
Anybody can pay $8 to see a movie, but only a true artist can be paid $8 to be in a movie.
Shiny, shiny star.
Snotty lead actors need lines, direction, motivation, not you. You sit on your butt perfectly in scene after scene.
Well, that's Hollywood.
A true pro, you're always focused, even if you're seldom in focus. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Nobody, because you're not just anybody, you're a paid anybody.
I don't recognize
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, this is David Strimme, driver of the Atrius Holmes number 64 car for Rusty Wallace. And you're listening to Real Racing USA with Jack Smith and Rick Angies.
When I ride a chopper, this is the position I ride in. Not like this. Up here.
That's this comfortable. Is the way I roll.
This way? I don't think so.
All right, Jack, with one win, two runner-ups, three semifinals, ranked third in the nation, runner-up in the Western Division, and only 7 points from the championship in 2007. Big news for 2008. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Valerie Thompson. Valerie, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing real good.
My head's spinning. We just listened to your promo piece there for, what was that?
Go Daddy. When you were with Tuttle.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't hear that, but that was what we were playing as we introduced you.
You did? Well, that's great and lovely.
So you got big news for 2008, huh, Valerie?
Yeah, we got sponsorship for 2008. Somebody, bless their little heart, decided to sponsor me.
Not only that, though, you're going to the NHRA, the Powerade Drag Racing, huh?
Yes, sir, I am. We are going NHRA, and we're gearing up for it. I got a lot of testing to do. I'm a little bit behind the eight ball in the testing, but, you know, I'm going to make it happen. And if I'm not ready for the first race, I'm not ready. I'm not going to push it. You know, we're trying to take it a little bit slow and we're just going to go for it, you know.
How big of a jump is this?
It's huge. I'm probably trying to accomplish what somebody would normally do in their lifetime of, you know, 2 years, 1 to 2 years, trying to go from 9 seconds to 6 seconds. But I'm trying to cram it all together and go 9 seconds to 6 seconds, 6.97s, all in, you know, a matter of a couple of months. And I just started recently training out there at No Problem Raceway in Louisiana. So I've got it down to the 8.3s. Do you think I have a little bit more to go?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you have to do, I mean, besides the preparation for the bike and stuff, but you yourself to make it down that the quarter mile that quick?
Well, it all starts back at home. I have to prepare myself, train myself. I just started doing lots of yoga and working out with weights. And then, you know, feeling real comfortable and confident about, you know, how, you know, just building up that strength. And that strength I use and I apply it to the track. And the preparation is, you know, just listening to my crew chief and following his instructions and trying to do every single thing that I could possibly do so I don't blow up the motor.
So what class did you race in last year in the All Harley Drag Racing Association?
The V-Rod Destroyer class.
Right, the V-Rod. So there's that big of a difference between those and the pro stocks.
Yes. Big and huge.
Wow.
And I'm right now training on a Suzuki, and, you know, the lowest time I got, you know, I'm pretty consistent on the time around 8.3s. And that's when I just started really going straight, and, you know, it's a bigger tire, and going from 7-inch to 10-inch doesn't seem like a whole lot, but it sure in the heck is.
Yeah, that's it.
I have to master the Suzuki, and then my next step is to master and jump on the pro stock Buell, and that's going to be the biggest challenge. And, you know, Angel, she's been, you know, a racer out there for over 10 years, and she's all into Suzuki's, and is now on the Buell side, and she said it's completely different. You know, I read her blog, I was like, oh no, she's having trouble. But I don't know any better. I don't know a Suzuki, so you know what? I'm going right into it, and I'm just going to get right on it, and I'm going to do the best I can and be safe. My biggest worry is, you know, I just want to be safe and ride, and I want to have fun.
So what prompted the, how did this come about, and what was the process that brought this about? I mean, did you sit around one day and say, I want to go faster, or what?
No. I told myself I was going to go NHRA. I really wanted to do it in 2007, you know, and then realistically, I wasn't able to do that. So, you know, I told myself and prepared myself, I'm going NHRA. I don't care what it takes. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get the sponsorship. And, you know, my current sponsor calls and said, hey, you want to go NHRA? Do you want to go back to the V-Rod? I said, I'm going NHRA.
How much of a jump is that, Valerie, from the All-Harley up to the NHRA? Is it like going from the minor leagues to the big leagues?
Yeah, it is in a sense. You know, it's just faster, and, you know, it's more intense, I think. And, you know, the fans, you know, I really like the fans and to see those fans in the audience. And, you know, I really like that. That's like a big, huge adrenaline for me. But you never always forget where you come from. So the All Harley Drags has always got a special place in my heart because it is who I am today. And, I'm still going to go back to the All Harley Drags and, do about 4 or 5 races when I'm not racing on the NHRA circuit. Mm-hmm. So I still want to come back and play.
There you go.
And you brought along, the crew chief along with you, huh?
I did. I brought along a new crew chief, which is Gary Tonglet, and I'm kind of got some other things in the works for some more assistance for me to go fast and, you know, do the tuning and the consultant, and I just haven't signed the contract with them just yet. I'm just kind of waiting on the attorney stuff, so that's going to be another big good thing, you know, in our favor, so...
So the top, yeah. the numbers you're going after are in the sixes is what you're talking about.
Well, the high sixes, that is what it takes to be competitive. Now, realistically, for myself, just jumping into it, you know, I'm probably going to be in the in the low sevens. I'm, you know, I'm not thinking I'm going to go out there my first race and go win the race, but, you know, I sure would love to try.
Yeah.
You know, I'm competing with, you know, the extreme talent that is out there, and this talent that, you know, they've been racing for 10 years, and, you know, I've been racing for, this is my third season in drag racing, you know, so I got a lot of learning to do.
So tell us about the, sell us on this sponsorship you got, the new one you got.
The new sponsorship, they're called The Real Security Company, and they also use a name called Ion, and Ion with a little eyeball in it. That's the name I'm going to have all over my leathers and trailer. And they provide GPS tracking device systems for anything that moves. You can go from pit bikes to golf carts to, you know, your motorcycle to your trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of those HDRA trailers out there that, and NHRA, any type of drag racing or any trailers, cars, you know, you can track this GPS system on the dime. And you can also track it through the computer. You can find out where you're going, and it will track your 7 years of your past, where your vehicle went.
So if somebody was...
Sponsor,
go ahead.
My sponsor, Eldon Hepner, he was my sponsor last year, and he was an associate sponsor for me, and he would call me and say, why is my race girl speeding? And I would be driving my truck and trailer down the highway, and I was like, Eldon, it's, you know, 75 miles per hour. Like, why is my race girl speeding? Or he'll call and says, well, I don't see your trailer attached to your truck. Your trailer is located at this address, and your truck is going down the road. Or, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's working.
That's amazing. You
know? It really is. And also, anything, like I said, anything that moves, also from kids to pets. The kids is like, you know, around here in Arizona, we have the number one theft. And, you know, with the Amber Alert, when kids are missing, and you can give these kids this little device that's like the size of your cell phone, and you can put it in their backpack, and you set up these geofence. They're called geofence. So the kids can only go from point A to point F, you know, and if he goes outside of those parameters, then it will alert the parents. And, you know, you could also use it to track, you know, those husbands or wives that are misleading in a different direction. I don't want to say all that, but.
I hear you. I know what you're going to say.
You wouldn't know you had it on. Like, the kids wouldn't know they had it on. You know, the kids, when they're speeding or when they're driving their parents' car, if they got it on, heck, you can find out where they're at, what they're doing. You know, typing in on the internet. Internet's awesome.
Yeah, we were just talking about that the other day. We were down at Immokalee Drag Strip, and one of the guys I was with kept pointing out that how many of those trailers weren't marked. I said, well, probably a lot of them aren't marked because of they're afraid people will steal their stuff. But and as often as we hear about race trailers,
absolutely,
and haulers being
stolen,
I mean, it's commonplace. And it would just make sense that this is something that you would just be a no-brainer that you're going to spend the money to get.
You know, it's around $600, you know, to have
cheap
set up and to have, you know, if you go and buy multiples, it's at a lower price, obviously. But, I mean, it's so worth it. And I actually had my, before he came along, I actually was in a restaurant after one of the races. And then we go into the restaurant, and not even 10 minutes, this lady comes up to my table and says, hey, your alarm's going off. There's a man in a red truck, and, you know, all of a sudden they're gone, you know. And I was like, uh-oh. So I went out there, and sure enough, they broke into my Dodge truck and took my computer. And, you know, had I had that, it would have called my phone immediately, and it will call up to three numbers, you know. And it's really great because they're a good fit for me, and it's, you know, what we do best is going straight and fast, but we have to protect our valuables in order to get straight and fast. So it's a good fit for me and my sponsorship this year. It's awesome.
No doubt. And a good thing for your sponsor with you going to the NHRA is a lot of TV coverage.
Yes, I know. I am brushing up on my TV skills right now. I videotape myself, and I've been told over and over to do that, and I set the camcorder and I'll start talking, and like I just won the race, you know, or like, you know, hey, I red lit and
I tell you, somebody
do that, but
somebody to watch. Just watch a little John Force.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching the races in California, and I was just watching how I pay more close attention to everybody and how they're talking and just, you know, getting their sponsor names out there. It's just like, wow. It's boom, 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 and they're done.
Uh-huh.
They said a mouthful.
Yep.
So when's your first race?
I want to be like him. My first race is in March 12th at the Gator Nationals. And, you know, if I'm not ready for it, I'm still going to go out there and, you know, see what it's all about. And, you know, the new team that I have that I'm kind of pairing up with, I'll just go out there and hang out with them and, you know, and see what it's like behind closed doors.
There you go.
And another thing is, you know, speaking behind closed doors is my GPS sponsor. He also has a device, which I'm going to link up to my website here pretty soon. My website's going to be getting updated here within the next month. And you can put cameras in your trailer, and so you can really see what goes behind closed doors. And you can watch us work on the bike and on, you know, just doing what we do best.
Oh, that's awesome.
Online, and, you know, and it's a great product. He has many different products, but, you know, besides the GPS unit.
And that's therealsecuritycompany.com. And
it sure is. The Real, R-E-A-L, security dot, security company, all spelled out, .com. Or you can log on to my website and find the Real Security Company. They also go, like I said, I'm the name that they're letting me. The name that they want me to use is Ion, because Ion is it. We keep an eye on your, you know, on your product, on your trailers, and we got a little slogan. You know, keep an eye. What was the slogan we came up with? Keep an eye on VT. Eye on a dime. Oh, forget it. I can't remember.
You need to get the video camera out and practice
just,
that.
Yeah, just get the video camera out and take that.
I'm on a blonde moment.
All right, Valerie. We wish you the best, and of course, we'll be following your racing career this year. And
yeah, it was great talking to you. And you know, last time I talked, I was pretty preoccupied at the hotel. So
checking into a hotel in Bonneville Salt Flats or somewhere out there. You going to do that again?
You know what? I've got something in the works that I might I'm applying for. I'm applying for the Steve Fawcett land speed record. It's a car that is capable of going over 800 miles per hour, and they're searching for a female.
There you go, Valerie.
Put my name in the pot.
You go, girl.
All right. We'll talk to you.
Okay.
We'll talk to you soon, Valerie.
Hey, great. Thank you. Have a great night.
You too, Valerie.
Valerie Thompson.
She wants to go fast.
Yeah, buddy.
No, I'm telling you.
What is that, ValerieThompsonRacing.com?
VTRaceGirl.com.
Ah, VTRaceGirl.com.
Yeah, VTRaceGirl.com.
Holy cow.
Yeah. She's always fun to talk to.
Yeah, last time we talked to her, she was out at Bonneville Salt Flats working on a land speed record.
Yep. Yeah, and she got it, too.
Yeah, she did.
She did get it.
She did good.
Of course, on the front page of RealRacingUSA.com, Valerie Thompson rides into 2008 with confidence. You can read that right there. And we got links to all our stories and stuff, and every show that we've ever done is up there on Real Racing USA.
Ah, my God. There's a lot of them, too.
Oh, there is a ton of them.
We're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back and talk. We're going to Toronto.
Toronto, eh?
Yeah.
We're going up north, eh?
Hey.
Eh.
Hello, I'm Frank Bartles, and this here's my partner, James Brown. As the weather starts getting too hot, we hope you will reach for one of these. New Van James Brown Wine Cooler.
It tastes good.
They come in three funky flavors. Gravity Grape.
Get down.
Crime of Passion Fruit.
Oh, Timothy.
And my personal favorite, Papaya.
Papaya's got a brand new bag.
It'll get you off faster than a big city lawyer.
Woo!
and a single pack serves 6 to 10, just like James.
New Bartles and James Brown wine coolers. The cooler cooler, made in the cooler.
Now behind bars everywhere.
And thank you for your support.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Okay, we are back. Just got finished talking to Valerie Thompson. She's up in Louisiana getting ready for her first run in the NHRA at the Gator Nationals. And now, Jack, we're going way up north.
Where it's really warm.
Really warm.
Really warm.
Really warm.
Welcome to Real Racing USA. Neil Armstrong from the Toronto Motorsports Park.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing real good. How you doing, Neil?
Oh, nice. Trying to stay warm.
There you go, man. I bet it's a little chilly up there, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit first about Toronto Motorsports Park.
Oh, it's a Toronto Motorsports Park was originally named Cayuga Dragway. It's a 53-year-old track now, but it's been around for years. We do a lot up here, drag racing. We got a road course now, too. We stay busy the whole season. We run from April till deep into November, usually, when the weather sticks with us that long. But we're busy. It's a good track. We went to a national event track a few years ago back in 2002, and we just keep up as we can go, and things are looking pretty good this year.
Now, you also run some IHRA events up there?
Yeah, we run a national event. The IHRA Canadian Nationals on September 19th to 21st this year. We've moved it back a few weeks. But, yeah, we've been running it for a few years now through the IHRA, and real good event, like a real good event.
Now, that takes me to my next question, the fuel problems up there. The Canadian government's getting ready to ban leaded fuel. Is that what I understand?
That's what's going on now. It's been exempted for a few years, off and on, like different years. It's exempted a little bit farther down the line. It started first happening, I think it was 91, 92 around then when it originally happened. And they went after the suppliers that were doing the leaded fuel. And they made some changes, that they exempted it, and away we went again with leaded fuel. And it just kind of got put on the back burner. Nobody paid too much attention to what was really going on. And then now it was, boom, it's in our face again. They're going to do something. They're going to do it in a year. And we haven't really had any real setup time. We have, but we haven't. We haven't had the time to really change it. It's going to be a problem unless we can get an exemption put on it or everybody gets on the same playing field with it. And it's something that's going to happen down the road for everybody anyways.
Now tell us a little bit about what the problems will be.
Well, the biggest problem I see, most of our professional racers up here, because we're close to the border, we're only 45, 50 minutes out of Buffalo. Most of our professional racers are American, and most of those guys are running leaded fuel because they've always been allowed to, and it's never been an issue before. But you've got pro modified, the gas burning cars are running leaded. Your pro stock is all leaded fuel. Top sportsmen, top dragster, anybody that's running gasoline for the most part is running leaded fuel. And most of the racers, I don't think, the American ones, don't even realize that rule happened years ago, and all of a sudden it's in their face now that this is going to be an issue. Somebody has to do something. We've got to get together with the Canadian government and the American government or whoever to try and work this deal out so that it gets onto the same playing field. And that's the problem right now. The Canadian government's pushing for something, probably not realizing the consequences of what it will cause down the road.
Well, yeah, and just as we were speaking with that organization a few weeks ago, Rick, the North Carolina Motorsports Association deal, government bodies, local and state and
they
national,
don't realize.
They have no idea what the
they
real
don't realize the impact, especially with a facility such as yours that's been around for, God, over 50 years, national event. Just think what that would, the impact on the area around you would be if you were to lose that at a national event.
Oh, it'd be huge, especially in the area. It would be huge. But that national event goes away, chances are we would too. We couldn't live on our regular weekly racing that we do every weekend. And on top of that, when we bring in our show cars, mostly American cars again, we would lose that whole aspect of what we're doing because we couldn't bring those cars up.
No doubt about it. And I mean, I remember when this whole thing started, like I believe it was, like you said, the early 90s. We also had they talked about it here in the United States too, and it just seemed like here it just kind of just faded away because some of the governments realized what would happen if the racing went away. You know, I mean, a lot of them think of it as a pain in the ass, but other ones that do realize that the money that comes in from this sport is huge.
That's right, and it's a small percentage. Like, the exemption is not to everybody. Like, you go to the gas pumps in Canada, you buy unleaded gas, and it's been that way for years and years.
Yeah.
The exemptions are really, like, to farmers and their tractors and to motorsports. I think boats are in there, and airplane, I think they've got a permanent exemption for that. But, I mean, it's not that big of a percentage of the fuel use that's up here, and it's just... It's not something the public even understands, and that's the real big problem of it is most people, the layman that sits in the grandstand or up in the grandstands watching the race, he knows the car runs on gas. He's never heard about the split between lead and unleaded.
Right. And you're right, though. The percentage of the usage of the leaded fuel is actually microscopic compared to the total fuel usage for the country.
That's right. Very, very, very small. I don't know what the numbers are on it, but it can't be very big at all. Like, we've got three national events, IHRA national events up here between us and Grand Bend and Edmonton, and then numerous racetracks around. And a lot of the tracks, like the ones that stay, now I don't know, we talked about this earlier, Jack and I were talking about whether Cascar and that up here runs leaded or unleaded, but I know a lot of other places have switched on leaded, so it's even smaller than we even think. But the problem with it down the road is when you've got these other cars, there's nothing to say that the other cars can't run on unleaded fuel. It's nobody's ever had to put the research and development time into it to build the engine to run on the stuff because they never really had to. And that becomes the problem. Like, the majority of engine builders on top of the race cars themselves are all American, and they're not even looking at this.
No, it's not even on the radar at all. I mean, we started talking about it, and even in person, when I've been talking to people in person about it, I just get blank stares.
Like, we ought to get, you know, what's his name, Steve from Progressive on here.
Yeah, or something like that. But Yuli, when I was talking to him earlier today, he said, Yuli Berry, the owner, he said that it would take five. I asked him how long, Neil, it would take to make the transfer, and he said it would take five years perhaps.
Yeah, Uli's been talking to some people in the government now, and it's just the whole getting the word out to everybody and getting people to understand. Like, he's got the ball rolling on it. It's just how far he can get. And the way the government's rolled, it's so slow, it could very well take that long to get everybody on the same page and to work together with it.
Now, is there a deadline here of the 22nd of February where they're going to make this decision?
Yeah, the deadline's coming up. And we've had tons of people putting in, like, emails, and we put stuff up on our site, and other racetracks have too, trying to get email the government, tell them our concerns. Maybe they'll take another look at it. I think it'll have a good impact, but I really don't know the answer.
Yeah, we actually used, we wrote a little piece based on Stevie Letemp's program last week, and then we actually published straight off your website the thing you had on there about the pending law changes.
With the email address.
Yeah, I saw that on there. Yeah, it looked good.
Yep.
Amazing, man. I don't know. So... The bottom line is that this actually, it's not a matter of, this has to be addressed. There's just no way this can be ignored. This has to be addressed.
Absolutely. Something has to be done, or the racetracks up here are finished. I mean, we'll just, IHRA and NHRA, well, NHRA is not here now, but IHRA's up here, will have to pull out because there's no way they can carry their snake. They can't change or drop classes just to come up here. It just won't work. It's not practical. There's no logic in trying to do something like that. So they have to, some eyes have to open and some doors have to be opened here to see what the problems are and put that exemption in and see what happens.
Yeah.
Rick, what's the deal with stock car racing in America? These guys are all using leaded still, right?
Yeah, we're still using leaded fuel. There's quite a few of them, though, that like the bomber classes and stuff that stop and buy the gas.
Oh,
at
okay.
The gas pump,
you
know. I mean, it's not that. Actually, in the stock car world, I think it could be adapted easier than the the drag racing
because of the compression.
Yeah, because of the compression and the type of motors and all that. Like the IRL, they're totally running ethanol now. You know, that's a whole different ball game right there. But when you go to drag racing, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Well, Neil, is there? I'll tell you, you know, just keep us informed if there's any way that we can, keep pounding the drum, so to speak, and let us know if there's anything that we can do to help get out more than what we're trying to do.
Well, I think you guys have helped a lot. Just what you put on the website by cutting and pasting that stuff up there, it opened it gave the American people down where you guys are the vision of what's actually happening. And then now that email is there, they can start firing these things up. But when it starts coming from the American racers too, all it can do is help. Like say, hey, we can't come. If you change this, we can't come. They're going to think twice about what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to be in touch with Craig Clark from Track Rescue. Of course, he is involved with he comes up your way.
Yeah.
I'm going to be talking to Craig later tonight and see maybe we can get him pumping out this information too.
Every little bit helps.
Sure. All right, Neil.
All right, Neil. Well, what do you got coming up? What's your first event coming up?
Oh, we open the 1st of April, and usually our May 2-4 weekend, or Victoria weekend, we've got usually a Pro Mod show and jets and some other show cars and that going on. Then we run some big events all through the year, a little bit of everything, a lot of like sport compact stuff we've got. We've got, the National September. And there's some other things we're working on right now that we've got sitting on the table I can't really talk about, but when they get out, people are going to be a little shocked up here that we're actually pulling some of this stuff off. So it's going to be a good year.
All right. Keep us informed, Neil.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
All right. Good luck, man.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Neil Armstrong, not the guy who first set foot on the moon, but a lot of interesting stuff there. You know,
Stevie Letempt on the, I just realized I misspelled Stevie's name. He's going to shoot me. On that news story there, his name is actually, I left a T off the end of it, but Stevie Letempt, who does the Straight Lining with Stevie show every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, he actually broke this story as far as we're concerned. And as I went around looking up, trying to Google all this stuff, we couldn't find anything outside of Toronto and a couple of other places in Canada where this was even being talked about at all. And it just seemed to me so odd that such a major, something with such an impact, nobody's talking about it.
Nobody at all.
We put that post on the message board. I haven't looked in a while, but after about 5 or 6 days, it hadn't got much play. I mean, I don't know what we got to beat these folks over the head with. But
You know how it is in the racing community. If it doesn't affect me, I'm not really going to mess with it.
Yeah, well, it's going to sneak up on you,
bite you in the ass.
Real quick. Let's see. Where are we going with this next? We are going. I think. What do you think? Let's take a quick break and skip back over to Skip.
All right. Let's skip the skip.
Skip to skip. We're going to talk Hooters Pro Cup and what in the heck is going on with some of this crazy stuff in the stock car world. Some of it just makes you shake your head.
Don't forget to listen to Trackside tonight, every Monday night, 8 to 9 p.m., right here on Real Racing USA. We'll be right back.
Presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Armed with your trusty marker, you do the impossible. Make an incredibly dirty place even dirtier.
Scribble it down now.
Your jokes make us pee our pants. Lucky for us, they're down around our ankles.
Yeah!
You answer our most vexing question. Whatever happened to the man from Nantucket?
Oh, that's a good one.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, oh ruler of the rhyme. Because when we're looking for a good time, we call you.
Oh, Mr. Bathroom Stall Duty Joe Prider.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real American Heroes. Today we salute you, Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
When conventional wisdom said no one could make a hot dog longer than 6 inches, you dared to dream.
Dared to dream.
You knew the limitations of a regular size hot dog bun, and you ignored them.
Can't stop me now.
You made a 10-inch wiener, and people cheered. But you weren't satisfied. You said, wait, I think I can still give you 2 more inches. And so the footlong was born. So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Hot Dog Hero, because you gave every single one of us our fondest wish, a bigger wiener.
Thank you.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion, to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today, 5starbodies.com.
The O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA.
Okay, we are back on Real Racing USA live on Tuesday night. Jack, we got a special guest on the line with us.
Yeah, we hooked up with Skip Wall and also with Lonnie Rush, who has been racing on the Hooters Pro Cup Tour for quite a while, since 2001, I believe. Welcome to Real Racing USA, Lonnie. And Skip, you got your ears on okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah, and I do too as well, Lonnie Rush here.
All right. So, Skip, you want to kick this off?
Well, we were on the radio last week, and we was talking about Hooters Pro Cup last week and how some things have changed, what Hooters done for good, done for the worst, and we just thought maybe we would just get someone else involved in it that could answer it, a driver and owner. And so we invited Mr. Lonnie Rush on the show, and I got to talk to Lonnie also. He's part of this new series coming about, the Supercar Stock Car Series. Lonnie, what do you think about this new up and coming series?
Well, Super Cup was an idea that was actually begun by a gentleman in Mooresville who was a former second place in the North Pro Cup owner. And believe it or not, my of all the things I've lost, I missed my mind the most. I can't even think of his name right now, but I'll get it in a second. But irregardless of that, the gentleman had the idea, Mike Krakowski, actually.
Yeah, Krakowski, name, yeah.
And he talked it up to a number of folks, and then he got involved with Joe Smalling and Mr. Nesbitt, and Joe Smalling kind of ran with it to some of the different promoters. And the idea is simply there are a significant number of competitors who have been former Pro Cup competitors who can't afford to keep up with the series at the present time financially, and their cars are parked. Most of them are older steel body cars and have different potential engine combinations. So the Super Cup Series is designed for those folks, a place where they can take their vehicles they already own and race and have a good time. The purse structure will be very close to what a late model stock car would receive. The races will be 100 green flag laps, so there won't be any pit stops. Won't be necessary to have a large pit crew on hand. And it should be a lot of fun, but that's the purpose of Super Cup, is to provide a place for people who have existing equipment to race them and enjoy racing.
Yeah, which is what it's all about. Go ahead, Skip.
You're part of this advisory board, right?
That's correct.
Now, this is made up of car owners and drivers, a former official. That's a pretty good ring right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a well-rounded group. We met and shared our ideas, and we have, like I say, drivers, owners, officials, and so forth. And each person brings something to the table that's good. We've tried to make this a series where you don't really have to spend any money on your automobile to come and race with us. If you have a vehicle that was legal in 2001, 2002, in the early part of this decade with cast iron cylinder heads, it's legal to come and race. If you have an engine that's a little bit later version with the aluminum cylinder head mandated by USAR, that engine's also legal. Any vehicle that has passed technical inspection from 2001 to 2006 in the Hooters USAR series would be legal in the Super Cup series without any changes. Also, our plan is to run on used tires at the present time. Most people have a fair amount of used BF Goodrich tires from recent years. And that will be the tire, at least in the opening of the season. As the season goes on, if there's a supply issue, we're not sure where that'll go. It could become new tires. But at least initially, it'll be used BF Goodrich tires. And those tires have proven to be good because the consistency of the stagger in radial tires makes it easy to work with. Therefore, you don't have to have a real tire expert on your crew to make sure your stagger stays consistent. That's a good thing.
Well, Lonnie, about 2 years ago, we had Kenny Wallace on our show. And towards the end of the interview, he was talking about some of the series, the traveling touring series. And of the USAR Hooters Pro Cup, he said something to the effect that as long as what they're doing, because he liked the series. He said, as long as they keep doing what they're doing without making a lot of changes and forgetting where their roots were and keeping it affordable, they would do fine. And that's paraphrasing what he said. But, Skip, you've listened to that interview several times. And it would seem that some of the decisions over the last couple of years have kind of gotten away from that, at least to observers, novice observers like ourselves.
Well, I would agree with that. Many years ago, I happened to be involved as an owner, partial owner of a truck team in NASCAR. And I'll parallel that to the current situation in Pro Cup. When NASCAR got away from the original idea behind the truck series and went to the larger racetracks and obviously went from their halftime break to pit stops, they totally put the lower budget teams completely out of that series. And obviously, if you parallel from today backwards, it's just incredibly expensive to run that series. And what's happening in Pro Cup, and I think I can understand this to a point from their point of view. I mean, they're in the marketing business marketing their races, and I think they're trying to take their series to new markets. But unfortunately, in the process, by going to some of the larger tracks that they've gone to in recent years, and certainly this year will be 2008. The purses haven't increased, and they are just making it very difficult on the lower budget teams. Their television package was announced late, and I'm not sure how effective that will be. It depends on the time slot that yet to be announced. Obviously, a time slot at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon means nothing to nobody, regardless of the channel. If it's at 7 o'clock in the evening, that would be a positive thing, assuming that channel is available to you. But to go back to the cost of racing, bottom line is the upcoming Milwaukee race is an example, a combo race within the regular North and South Series. Becomes basically a championship race because of the need for both the North and the South competitors to compete for points. And then they've announced that they'll have an open practice on a Thursday, qualifying and regular practice on Friday, and a race on Saturday. That's totally derogatory to the lower budget teams. This series started out as we'll show up on Saturday morning, we'll run our program and run the race Saturday night and go home. You start going to three-day programs, the cost of getting the people there from various parts of the country, certainly the South competitors, from housing of your people there, all those costs are just unbearable.
And travel.
And the travel is with the cost of fuel today. The additional cost to gear up, gear ratio-wise, and the maintenance on the engines for the larger racetracks. I mean, anytime you stretch one of those engines out on a mile racetrack, it's a significantly higher amount of cost for maintenance and potential for failure. So I think it's possibly good for USAR from a marketing standpoint, but it's certainly derogatory to the competitors because of the cost. I just don't know that the lower budget teams can afford to do this, and taking into consideration the number of races in 2008, you look at Iowa, which has become a very expensive race to run, same basic reasons, travel, size of the racetrack, speed, so forth, and now we have Milwaukee, and then obviously we have Rockingham, so...
And all this without an increase in the purse.
That is correct.
And what about, like, entry fees and stuff? Have they gone up?
Yes, they have. Entry fees have gone up slightly. It's just everything is up, up, up. And they have decreased significantly between 2006 and 2007 in their point funding money. They took out approximately $170,000 overall.
And wow.
Reduced... By my calculation, approximately $39,000 between 2007 and 2008.
Well, you know, a few years ago, Skip, you'll remember this, there was a bit of an argument occurring on the message board that we were running at the time, which we no longer do, but was dedicated just solely to the Hooters Pro Cup. And there was an argument about the expense to be one of the top competitive teams. And, you know, there were people who said that it would take at least $750,000, if not more, to be one of the top competitive teams. And this is like about 3 years ago we're talking. Does that ring true?
Well, I don't think that it costs that much if you're frugal to do the full series. But if you do it like some people have done it in the past, absolutely they spend that kind of money. Benny Gordon's team, supposedly, and I'm only quoting things I heard from members of that team, spent about $800,000 in 2006. And, you know, I don't know how much the team that McFarland is driving for in the South now spends, but, you know, you got to look at it from this viewpoint. These teams are full-time driver, owner, or driver, crew chief, and employees. Aren't cheap, and they have multiple employees full-time. If you have that situation, you have sophisticated traveling equipment in the way of truck, trailer, and what have you. it's a lot of money. I mean, I'm a small team. I'm the owner. I used to drive. My son drives now. And I have at least $200,000 invested in truck, trailer, cars, and support equipment. And I certainly didn't write that check all at once. It accumulated over a period of time. But that's a large investment. And I think from my point of view as one of what I consider lower-funded teams in the series, we all have a significant investment in our equipment to support USAR Hooters Pro Cup. And I think they should consider that sometimes.
Right, and it goes back to, I mean, relative basic short track racing mentality. You know, they're trying to make the money off the back eight.
Well, and I wouldn't disagree with that.
Go ahead, Skip.
I mean, let's take a team like Billy Bigley down there in Florida. Is it feasible for him to run a race like Billy?
We already know what his wife said.
Or is he just better off to skip that race and try to make the championship the best way he can?
We already know what Kim said.
How much is it going to cost Billy Bigley to go to Milwaukee? I know you've been to Lakeland before, and he's not that far from Lakeland.
Well, let's just try to do this in factual numbers the best I can, because I don't know what every team's costs are and how many people come at what time and so on and so forth. I can tell you that my team, we go with the minimum number of people for the test day, then the folks that we have to pit the car show up for the day of the race. We try to go to the race and back, if at all possible, without buying any hotel rooms. At least two to three of my people ride in the truck and sleep in the truck, going and coming. And you know, when we go to Lakeland, obviously you're gone long enough that you have to spend some time in a hotel, which Mr. Bigley would if he came north and so forth. We went to Iowa the first year, and we finished sixth in the race. And everyone that competed in that race was given 10 tires free by B.F. Goodrich after the race because we had some serious tire problems. And my team lost just short of $7,000 to run that event.
Finishing sixth.
And we finished sixth.
That doesn't make it really feasible, does it, Lonnie?
Well, no, it doesn't, because I feel that a lot of the folks that are racing certainly from 10th to the last place, you know, in any event, you know, on a regular basis, let's say finishing in the points or what have you, guys that aren't full-time racers, that don't have full-time crew people, the Joe Harrisons, the Lonnie Rushes, I don't know about Martinez, but he may or may not have full-time people. But, you know, a lot of people in the series that have supported this series. I mentioned Joe Harrison because Joe's supported this series since the beginning. I don't think he's ever not gone to a race. If he has, I'm unaware of it. And, you know, he's just part of part of the woodwork.
From the beginning.
Yeah, from the very beginning. And, you know, these guys, like myself, you know, I'm self-employed. I have a business of my own. Everybody that works on my crew, including the driver, has a job. We all work, and we do this as a hobby. We do it for fun, and we hope to not lose a lot of money. And, you know, we know we're going to lose some money, but the question is, how much can you stand? How many small business people can afford to take away from their business more than, you know, $10,000 a year?
And also, what's making it tough now, Lonnie, is, I mean, you don't know, you can't tell your sponsors whether they're going to be on TV or not.
Well, that's true. I mean, the TV package has been helpful. We have one sponsor that if we didn't have right now, we couldn't compete. Ray Skillman Classic Cars in Indianapolis has helped us the last 2 years, and he's been a great supporter of our program. Without him, we'd never make it to the racetrack, period. But we need, on our team, additionally, we feel like another 100 and $50,000 in sponsorship would be about the right amount of money that would allow us to run the full schedule and be competitive. And that would be, even with that kind of money, I would still not pay any of my crew people a penny. I couldn't, because it would require that much money to pay the bills just for the traveling expenses and just to go and compete.
Well, I mean, at the super late model level in Florida, there's a few teams that where the driver and the whole operation is pretty much a full time. There are people who work in the racing business full time. They're engine builders or whatever. They have race shops, and when it really comes down to it, it's almost impossible for the guys who race only on the weekends or holding down regular jobs. It's almost impossible, isn't it, Rick, for them to compete for the championships of, like, the Touring Series and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it sounds to me like there's just no way that there's no way that you guys that are working other jobs and not having full-time crews and stuff, if you're not paying your crews, I know these guys, some of these development teams, they got some pretty high-end employees coming in there to be crewmen.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very proud of our team because I will have to say that all my people are volunteers, and Tony Cox and Gene Cox, both of UFAR, have used my team for reference many times because we have run well. We qualified second on two occasions last year, once in a regular season, once at the first championship race, and finished third. Had an opportunity to win a couple times, just wasn't able to close the deal because of various circumstances, which is what happens in racing. But my team runs good. We run real good. We don't do it with money, excess money. We do it with just effort on our own part. And my drivers are pretty intelligent about setup, and I've been doing it a long time. So, you know, we do it with, I'll just say, with brains and a lot of effort.
Let me ask you something. You've got some Busch experience. You've got some Craftsman truck experience. Give us a little comparison between the two. I know it's probably like comparing apples and oranges, but, you know, you earned a little bit of money there. Did it cost you as much to run it?
At one time, I think you could have run Busch in the late 80s, early 90s for about what it would cost to run Pro Cup now. Certainly it's astronomical what it would cost to run the Busch or the Nationwide Series today. I mean, you just have to look at what the escalation of costs have been because what NASCAR's done with their three Premier Series is they continue to mock, you know, Sprint Cup with their Nationwide Series and their Truck Series. I mean, technically, underneath the front section, the front frame section, and the rear frame section, and for that matter, a Pro Cup car is about the same. They're all the same, with the exception of the car tomorrow. It's slightly different, but up until 2008, you could set a front section on the jig, a rear section on the jig, and it would be a 105-inch wheelbase for a Pro Cup car or a Nationwide-type car, a Busch car. Stretch it out 5 inches, it becomes a Winston Cup basic chassis. Stretch it out 2 more inches, it becomes a truck chassis. The difference at that point, and once the basic frame is assembled, is the roll cage to fit the body. But the wheels, the spindles, the hubs, the A-frames, the rear-end housings, the brakes, the fuel cell, the dry brake, the seat, the gauges, the exhaust systems, they're all the same. They're all the same. If you turnkey a brand-new USAR Pro Cup car from scratch with all brand-new parts, it's $100,000.
Amazing. Let me ask you a question real quick off topic. Do the Pro Cup cars run leaded fuel?
Yes, we do.
Okay. What would the challenge be to change that to unleaded fuel?
It would be a minor change in the cylinder head valve area. Primarily, and that has not proven to be a major change even at the Sprint Cup level. They don't run that many miles at that level, and they overhaul their engines. They run them, you know, a race, if you will. The unleaded fuel doesn't seem seem to have a terrible effect in that many miles. And we run a stainless steel valve in Pro Cup, and they would be able to withstand the unleaded fuel better in the valve seat configuration that we use than the than actually the NASCAR cars.
Yeah, the reason he asked that is we were just talking with Neil Armstrong from the Toronto Motorsports Park about a situation developing in Canada where the Canadian government is getting ready to close the loophole allowing racing vehicles, drag racing, stock car racing, whatever. They have been exempted, and now they're no longer.
Now they're getting ready to put the hammer down.
Yep.
And that would include their alcohol classes and nitromethane.
Yes.
Classes.
Scary stuff.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That'll have a major effect there.
Oh, yes, boy. It's huge. And it's this.
He's talking about it's going to shut them down.
This is going to happen in like 3 days from now. And
that'll have a dramatic effect on IHRA's involvement.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. We were just talking with Neil about that a few minutes ago. But so what do you think the answer is? Is that it's either they're either going to have to, I mean, the bottom line for that series to survive, it would seem that they're either going to have to get more more people that are full-time racers involved, or they're going to lose racers and they're going to go people that are more hobby, where it is a hobby and how much you're going to spend on your hobby, and they're going to go to things like the super stocks, or what's
Super Cup.
I think what will happen is, at least for our team last year, what we did is we picked the races that we could attend that would be least expensive for our team to go to. Some we had to go to regardless of the expense because you have to compete in at least half of the events in order to qualify to go to the championship series events. Mm-hmm. We happen to have a championship series event within let's say an hour and 15 minutes of my home, so we certainly like to run at least that race. And last year we ran five regular season races out of eight, which was more than half. We placed high enough in the overall points, I think 21st or something like that. And and you have to be in the top 30, I believe. And we ran the first championship race, qualified second, finished third, and then we folded the tent. And it was simply economics. We couldn't afford to go to Iowa. We'd already experienced that the previous year. And obviously going to Myrtle Beach and last year and South Georgia and Lakeland was, we just couldn't afford it. So I feel that you'll see more teams, both north and south, in 2008. And I think Billy Bigley, which you brought up earlier, might be one of them. They'll run selected events, enough events so they can run some of the championship races that are within their.
You're running the North, right?
Excuse me?
You're running the Northern Series.
We run the North, that's correct.
Yeah.
All right. Will you take in that race at Bristol?
Well, we haven't so far. I'm not sure. That's the last race of our season before the championship races. And right now, we do this kind of one race at a time. Our intention, what we have laid out on our schedule, is to run South Boston, which is not very close to us, but it seems like we go there every year to test the new tire, and it's the first race. Our second race is Milwaukee. With the current state of affairs on the number of days, we may have to bypass that race simply because we can't afford it. Of course, then Mansfield is the third race, and it's very close to our home. Salem, Indiana, we normally bypass because it's really hard on race cars, although we run good there. Motor Mile, Jennerstown, we would run those because they're, close enough. We could get by running South Boston, Mansfield, Motor Mile, and Jennerstown. That would be half of the North season if we maintain the top 30 in points, and then we could go to Mansfield and fold the tent.
Well, Lonnie, I'll tell you what, man, you're a wealth of information. What you've shared with us in just this short time has been unbelievable. We definitely got to get you back on the show. Want to thank you a lot for being on with us tonight.
Well, and I'd like to say, Rick, before that, a lot of the things, the reason that we had talked about having you on was, and I mentioned this to you earlier, is not just we're talking about the Pro Cup and the Super Cup and these kinds of racing series, but the things that you're hitting on and I knew that this was where we wanted to go, are applicable to racers
the way down,
all over the spectrum.
Yep.
And it gives, I'm sure that people will listen to this and they will get, it's food for thought, that's for sure.
Well, I thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on, and I'd like to say one quick thing here. My driver that's going to drive our car in the Super Cup Series, a young man, 15-year-old Ryan Miller, who did well in the exhibition races, is going to be sponsored by Corman Railroad Group, and we're going to try to help promote cancer research. Mr. Corman, who owns that group, has cancer, has melanoma, and he would like to. We'd like to tell everyone to try to put some money and some thought into cancer research and prayers for people that are afflicted with that, because, as most of us know, it can affect children and all of us at any time.
Anytime. And as a matter of fact, we'll get back in touch with you real soon, and we'll get Ryan Miller on Real Racing USA Live.
I appreciate that, and thank you for having me on, and have a great day.
All right, thank you. And Skip, I'll talk to you very soon, and thanks again for your help, man.
Zach, I appreciate y'all having me on the show, and I want to get a quick plug. The first race for Supercar Stock Car Series, March 9th at Tri-County.
And what's that website? Southern?
www.southernmotorracing.com.
Southernmotorracing.com. Talk to you soon.
As always, Skip, it's great to talk to you, brother.
Take care.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
That's one of them. That's one of those interviews right there. Because I mean, this is a guy who who's got Busch experience, truck experience. He's been at the top level. He knows how to get her done.
Yeah, and he's always, and it's really true. Is Lonnie Rush has always gotten a lot of accomplishment in the Pro Cup.
Well versed too.
Without
well versed, knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, without spending the great big money like some of the other teams do. But I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with we're obviously going to run over here.
Yes, a little bit.
we're going to talk to Marty Little and about the reunion deal up at New Smyrna Speedway.
All right.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing, message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
This is Logan Ruffin, driver of the Torco Chevrolet Monte Carlo on O'Reilly ASA Fastlane on Real Racing USA.
And it is Real Racing USA, another Tuesday night. Jack and I trying to cram 3 hours into a two-hour show. Good thing we pay the bills here, Jack.
I guess so.
Yeah. With us right now, if you want to know something about Florida stock car racing, this is the man to talk to, Mr. Marty Little. Marty, how you doing tonight?
We're doing real well tonight. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing fantastic, man. Big show up there at New Smyrna this past weekend. I couldn't make it, but I heard all about it. Tell us a little bit about it from your perspective.
It was just fabulous. I had seen the list, you know, that Jerry had put up on his site prior to the reunion, and I got there, and there were half a dozen or ten, you know, great cars there, and the people. My gracious, the people that turned out for that thing: Bug Stevens, Don Stives, all these guys just seemed like they came out of the woodwork. Ron Narducci, and it just, the list was just endless of these cool guys, you know, from the 50s and 60s and even up into the 70s. And I was just flabbergasted. It was great. Jack and Carol did some interviews, and people got cranked up there, and it was a lot of fun. I'm sure there were people there that hadn't seen one another in several years, and it was a blast.
Tell me, Marty, what do you think is the popularity? I mean, what brings it out in this modified deal?
Because it's racing the way it used to be. It's hometown heroes from way back, and I saw some young people there, and by young I mean maybe in their 30s or early 40s. They probably couldn't have seen these guys race much at all, but maybe they knew them through an uncle or through their dad or something like that, or heard the name mentioned by other race fans. And if you lived in the Northeast or in upstate New York, stuff like that, and you saw any of these guys race at Lancaster or Stafford or anywhere, if Dutch Hoag was there, he won Langhorne. It was just a magical time. The cars weren't store bought; they were garage built. There was a lot of ingenuity going there, and that restored 2X coupe that Eddie Flemke drove. My God, you talk about history! Wow. It was just a great, great time.
And that was something about those cars back then. I mean, the ingenuity and the engineering that went into some of these cars. My dad used to race back then, flatheads and stuff. And the things they used to do to those cars, it was just unbelievable. Because they didn't have a whole lot to work with.
No, they did not. They certainly didn't. The ex-Gil Hearn car that was there, the orange and white number 12 that Marty Van Derten from New Jersey owns now. Marty was a crewman for Gil Hearn for 20 years. And he told me that that Gil ordered that car. Gil had a very wealthy car owner by the name of Tom Durkin at the time. Mr. Durkin was he was like a super race fan, but he was kind of quiet about it. And that was the first Troyer-built car that Gil ever drove. And it sat at Troyer's shop finished for a year and a half before Gil ever went to Rochester to get it. And it's just, one of those things. You built your own cars, and you and your crew or friends or maybe you had somebody like Bud Olson or somebody build a car for you. But there were no, store-bought cars. There was a lot of ingenuity and different bodies used and things like that. And it's just, it was a magical time. If you've got any of those old pictorials that Area Racing put out or some of the other publications, and you go back and look at those pictures, my God, those are just magic times.
No doubt, because my first ever stock car race was I used to go sit in the drive-in seats at Middletown, New York, at Orange County Speedway, and watch Will Cagle and all those guys going around that dirt track.
Yep.
And it was just.
It could have been Middletown. It could have been Flemington. It could have been Nazareth. It could have been anywhere up in there. Pavement, dirt, it didn't matter. Those were magical times. I got to Flemington and Reading and Nazareth and Danbury Fairgrounds. There was another magical place replica of Bob Palvereri's 7-Eleven coupe, that Plymouth coupe that was up there on Friday. My God, what a neat piece that was. And just so many of those cars that, not all of them were replicas. That blue 67 owned by the fella from Hialeah, that was the last coupe to run on Long Island. That's the real car. That's not a replica. And he runs it in the vintage events over at Zephyr Hills and takes it up to Winchester, Virginia and stuff. And that's the real thing. That is the real deal right there, and that's what's such a magical draw. All these people were heroes to us, and it's just, man, it's so great that everybody got together and did this thing, and I didn't realize till I was talking with Jack and them doing that little interview for Karnak that Carol had some ideas and made some calls, and Jerry got his deal going, and they realized, wait a minute, we're working for a common good here. And they just melded it all into one and pressed on. And, man, what a neat deal it was.
You used that word magical about five times there. And it's funny because, I wasn't from that area, and I certainly wasn't around stock car racing at that age,
Right.
And so I was at this event the other day. Really, I was there because Jerry had talked to me about it. And I thought, well, this would be one where we could go do some interviews.
Yep.
But until I got there and, I was like a kind of an outsider to the whole thing, kind of back looking at it. And that word magical totally described what I saw because, I didn't have a horse in the race, so to speak. I wasn't involved in it, but
right.
I certainly could feel that magic all afternoon seeing those people. Not only the guys from that era talking to each other, and some of them had never met, but the way people in their 40s and 50s were relating to these heroes of theirs when they were young, it was a magical afternoon.
It certainly was, and I think for a kickoff event that maybe had what it had maybe 60 days lead time or something to get this thing cranked up. It might have been a little bit longer than that, but my gracious, what a fun time! And yeah, there were a few little glitches that most people probably didn't even realize. But with a year to do the second edition of that, a year lead time, my gracious, I can't imagine how good the number two reunion might be.
And the one thing that I hope people, we have the you know, the show put together. It's about an hour and a half, a little over an hour and a half, I suppose, of interviews. And the thing about it is this was just some fans who decided to get together and make it happen.
Yep.
And it shows you what race fans can do. And I was talking to some folks yesterday about that. You know, these are just some fans who got together and said, let's do it. And some good things happened.
Well, my hat's off to Jerry and Carol and yourself.
Absolutely.
And everybody that had anything to do with putting that thing together. And, man, oh, man, what a neat, neat, fun time.
You know, Marty, the thing is, and you know, this event was fantastic, but we were involved with the Sunshine Deal, which was, I mean, another magical thing. The last night of Hialeah when all those people got together, you know, there's something about stock car racing from back then that it's just something that's almost indescribable.
Well, I think there's a camaraderie. You could be bitter rivals on the speedway, and yet when you travel to other tracks, here's a great example I can cite for you. At the old Governor's Cup, the Florida State Championship at Golden Gate back in the 60s and even on up into the 70s, the folks, and I can speak more from the Hialeah aspect because that's where I kind of grew up and did that, and also at Palm Beach. But when everybody, you could be the bitterest of rivals on the track at Hialeah or Palm Beach, but when you traveled over there to Tampa to do battle with all the out-of-state guys or with the West Coast guys, then everybody kind of stuck together. And it wasn't that you disrespected Will Cagle or Jim Fenton or any of these other guys that were top-notch racers from the Bay Area. It's just that there was that camaraderie, that commonness of, you know, we're representing South Florida here, and we want to go up there to Tampa and do the very best we can. And the fans stuck together. And like I say, you admired those other people. When Ed Howe came down, sure, it nine times out of ten, he was going to whip everybody's butt. Or Don Gregory or Butch Lindley or Harry Gant, any of these guys that would come down from out of state, you wanted to see them race and do well, but you also wanted your own people to do well, and you would really get behind them. And it's a camaraderie. It's a stick-togetherness that I think racing promotes. And you don't see too much of that today, and I think money has got a lot to do with it. And also, there's so much more to do today than there was back then.
Absolutely.
The choices of how to spend your entertainment dollar or your fun dollar, however you want to term it, today is so much wider than it was then. I mean, you hear people talk about, oh, yeah, my dad or my grandfather or my uncle took me to my first race when I was 6 or 10 or whatever. You don't ever forget those times.
Uh-uh. No doubt.
And if somebody even remotely close came to that reunion that had those memories from upstate New York or from Connecticut or New Jersey or New York or wherever it may have been, wow, does that stick with you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know what you were talking about, the camaraderie and stuff. You know, they come up to Tampa, like they could be beating the hell out of each other down there at Hialeah each and every weekend. They come up to Tampa, all the Tampa guys are going, oh, here come them Hialeah boys.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. And in the Bay Area had some, I mean, they had some great racers of their own that they didn't have to take a back seat to anybody. Buzzy and Wayne Rudiman and the guys that ran down at Saramanna. You had Plymouths, Oldsmobiles, Buicks. You had all these different body styles. And you know, Don Brothers and Jim Gully and some of these guys, they all were top-notch. Billy Gill, Bobby Gill's dad, and Frank Riddle, believe it or not, much more.
Bontrager.
Bontrager, all those guys.
Yeah.
And, man, alive, Sonny Kosas, and the list goes on and on and on. But those guys, they raced hard, and they weren't going to give you anything, and you're going to have to go up there and earn your way into that program every year. And Frank Derry did a great job. And then when the 100 lapper over there, the Gulf Coast 100, I think it was called there at Sunshine, that
right.
became part of that a weekend deal. That was that made it even more fun, you know.
Marty, don't you think that some of these changes and the way we perceive all this stuff is also because our relationship with our cars has changed drastically from what it was then?
Oh, absolutely. Sure it is.
Yeah.
Cars are much more complex today. You can't work on them. Everything is computer controlled. And, you know, most people don't even bother to change their own oil anymore. You go to a quick oil
sure.
place or you take it to the dealership or whatever. But the love affair with the automobile, I think, was very much stronger back then.
Oh, there's
no doubt. You
could
change your own spark plugs, and you could change your own oil, and if you wanted to put a set of headers on or do whatever you wanted to do, they don't do that today.
Well, that's like Jack and I were talking at the opening of the show. You know, we were talking about the 500 this past weekend, and you look at those cars of today, you know, I mean, you can't even tell the difference in them anymore.
Tell the difference, and I think a bigger thing to, I was fortunate enough to have a hot pass, be in the garage, and I got a chance. We've got a friend that works for the Greg Biffle's crew on the 16, the 3M car for Roush Fenway, and I spent a few minutes in a garage area looking inside the car, and those cars today are so complex on the inside, you just can't even begin to imagine. Between the seats with the big headrests and all the other stuff they got going, they've moved the ignition components, as you know, up on top of the dash so you can't hide anything under there. And then you got the oil tank enclosed back behind the driver, and you got the roof flaps and all this stuff. The cars on the inside are just massively complicated. And in the old days, as you well know, they were really simple. They weren't as safe. Nobody's going to argue that point. But, my God, they weren't near as complicated as they are now.
Yeah, you need a college degree to just climb in the driver's seat.
That's exactly right. And you can't be any bigger than a jockey, or that's not going to work either.
Yeah.
No more tiny lung-sized guys in NASCAR.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, Marty, as always, it was a pleasure talking to you again. One of these days, we got to do us an old announcer show.
That'd be great. Get Rick Bristol together and Dave Westerman and
we might
have a bunch of us on. That'd be a blast.
Yeah, well, the only problem with that, Marty, is it would take at least 6 hours.
Well, we like to talk.
It probably would.
Thanks a lot, Marty. We'll talk to you again
All right,
soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, Marty Little. I always love talking to Marty. You know, and one of my fondest memories of early this year, standing in the pits at Orlando Speed World, Marty Little, myself, Dave Westerman, and Rick Bristol was there, all standing there talking, and it was just fantastic. Yeah, that's one heck of a show. And once again, if you want to listen to that modified reunion show, it's on realracingusa.com. Like I said, an hour and a half. I want to thank Phil Shriver for helping us out with that one. Of course, Jerry Binner, the man himself, Rassin 118, put all that together, him and Carol Wicks. And, of course, he did have a lot of help. Bone Man helped him with the website and stuff. Those guys did an awesome job. Looking forward to the modified reunion, the second one coming up next year. Also, we're going to start working on the Sunshine Reunion Show, the second annual Sunshine Reunion Show. Got to get a hold of Terry Scampton here in the next week or two, and that will be coming on. Once again, you can listen to that show also on Real Racing USA. All our shows are archived, and we do broadcast 24 hours a day. So, Jack. I was just running my mouth. I don't get to do that as much anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, that is true. That would be an interesting show. You know, Dave Westerman, a lot of the announcers in the South that we know, and it would certainly be. But I'm not sure how we would be able to pull it. We'd have to have multiple.
We'd have to have multiple phone lines, and
holy cow,
we'd all be talking over each other and.
Yeah,
it would be
fun.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the last year we got an email or a phone call or something from a lady named Christy Hudson from Arkansas. She wanted to be on our show or something like that. She contacted us. We
right.
didn't go looking mm-hmm. for her, and you know, we always say the promoters, they never
They don't promote.
They don't promote. Well, we got a promoter who promotes, and she's back with us now. Welcome to Real Racing USA Live, Chrissy.
Well, thank you. How are y'all doing?
We're doing good. We've been going like crazy here, running a little over tonight. And along with Chrissy Hudson, we have Rachel York, who is going to be racing in the series. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. So, Chrissy, kick it off. Tell us what's new and great and better than last year in the AMP series.
Oh, gosh, we got a lot of things that's actually happening this year in the AMP series. We're running for a race called The Chase, and it's put on by Blue Ridge Liftgate out of Canton, Texas. They're going to be the guys that are running for the points on the series and girls are going to be chasing a 2008 Liftgate Stacker trailer for this year, sponsored to us by Blue Ridge Liftgate. We've got that going on. We have added a bonus. We had people on the series last year that ran with us, that ran 100% of the races, and we felt like we needed to give them a little extra, so we added a $500 bonus for those that do compete and run 100% of the series. We paid out a $10,000 point fund last year, or this past season, for our first year. And this year we're projecting a $25,000 point fund, paying $6,000 out to our champion this year. So we stepped up a lot of different things to try to make it more appealing for the racers and more beneficial at the ending result.
Well, Chrissy, last week we talked to Alan Tippin, I believe his name is, and he had nothing but, I mean, glorious things to say about you. One of the things that stands out that a lot of promoters do not do anymore is contact with their drivers. This guy said that you just made it too good for him not to run your series.
I just actually call and talk to them and kind of keep them included on what I'm doing. And before I make a decision, I try to talk to everyone, and I try not to make a leaping decision without the advice of the driver. They're the one that's going to have to make the change if there's a change occurs. So, the difference in me versus anyone else is I think I do spend way too much time sometimes talking to everybody, but I enjoy their company. They enjoy mine, and we talk about everything and try to make decisions on together, really, as a team.
And how did it come about that Rachel York is joining your tour?
I had went to Riverside International Speedway in 2006 and was helping Clayton Allen kind of get the word out to dirt late model racers that he was having a race. And we knew that we were going to hit this series and start running. And I talked to Rachel up there, and I talked to her family, visited with them for a while in 2006. And 2007, she appeared at one of the races down in Greenville Speedway, and that's in Mississippi. And we stood and talked for a while, and she was really looking for something different, and she wanted a little bit of a change in her race program. And we got to talking, and she's just like talking to any of my other drivers. And, we hit a friendship, and she picked up the phone and called me, and she said, "I want to race with you."
All right.
And it started from there.
Rachel, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I have been racing for, this will be my sixth year going in this year. I raced hobby stock previous for that, and last year was my first year in a super late model, and I raced at Riverside International Speedway. That's my home track, and I was interested in AMP to go and travel and just, try different tracks and things like that. So, and Chrissy had come talk to me, and y'all know she's really great about promoting the series and her drivers, and she's a good person. She's got the heart and passion for this series and these super late models too, and I think that makes a big difference in it. I mean, someone has to have the passion and want to, do that, and Chrissy does. So she does a great job at it. So I'm very excited about running AMP this year.
So many of these big series, the drivers never even meet the promoter, much less get a phone call from them. Well, they don't even know who they are.
Rick, We don't run across ladies racing dirt super late models very often. That just occurred to me.
She's our second one we've had on this show.
Is that right?
A second, maybe third, but I'm pretty sure it's the second one.
Yeah.
And Christy, I tell you, you know, compared to our last interview we had with you, you sounded a little nervous and stuff. Right now, I tell you what, you sound like a ball of fire with a ton of confidence.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm a nervous wreck, to tell you the truth. I stay that way, though. I'm very radio scared and TV scared.
I tell you what, you can fool me. You're doing a really good job.
Well, thank you. I've learned to talk a little bit more, you know, a little more open since I started this series. And I'm talking to actually the other promoters has built me a lot of confidence. Mike McNay, he is one of the rule advisors of our series, and he has really put a lot of confidence in me. And the drivers have been phenomenal with saying, you know, keep talking, good work, you're doing great. And, you know, so it helps, but I still stay real nervous.
Now tell me, how, you know, the first year you were pretty well received with the racetracks and stuff. It looks like the schedule's expanded, and you got some challenge races too.
Yeah, we had some challenge races last year to try us out and see if, you know, if we could do them a good job or they could do us a good job. And, you know, we were very tickled when we were back on some challenge and races this year. We opened our season March the 21st and 22nd with the Mississippi State Series, and we'll be at North Alabama Speedway, and that race will pay $2,000. And March the 22nd, we'll travel 41 miles west, and that race will pay $2,500, and those races are with Mississippi State Series.
Man, so you're racing in three states, four states?
We're running North Alabama Speedway, Corinth Speedway, which is Mississippi Speedway.
Yeah.
And they're real close to each other. And then we go to Greenville Speedway.
This is dirt country out that way, right? I mean, you don't have a lot of asphalt tracks in that zone.
We don't have any asphalt tracks in Arkansas. We do have an oval that's in West Memphis. I think it's in West Memphis.
So, Rachel, do you... you know, what do you think about this? What kind of success do you think you can have here in your first year with this tour?
Well, I hope to have great success like everybody would, but I know there's a lot of good drivers there. So I'm just looking forward to going out there and doing my best, you know, only being my second year in a super late model. So I'm just looking to, you know, go out there and just do the best I can. And, you know, everybody wants to win, but, I mean, I would be happy with just, you know, top five finishes and, you know, doing well, just traveling and experiencing a new series and getting to know the people on the series and experiencing all these new tracks and learning them. And I'm just looking forward to doing all that.
What kind of car are you in, Rachel?
I'm in a GRT.
GRT.
There you go.
Yeah. That's them Alabama, Mississippi, and all of them GRTs.
Yeah, we had the chassis discussion last week with Alan. And what's the transition been like going from, you know, up to the super late models? Getting those cars under control has got to be a handful at first.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot different from stepping up from a hobby stock to a late model. It was a lot more horsepower, but just the way they feel, the way they roll, the setups on them, it was just a whole new experience to me. And I wasn't really quite sure what I was feeling there at first. You know, is that supposed to feel that way? Is that supposed to do this? So it's been a great learning experience. And, I mean, I'm still learning. There's a lot that I feel I need to learn. And, you know, I have a long way to go to learn a lot more to grow in this sport, and I'm excited about doing all that as well. But, yeah, it was a different experience for me, but a very exciting experience as well. So I look forward to that.
Yeah, when I've talked to drivers who've moved up to the super late model class in dirt, they say the biggest change for them is coming out of the turns.
Yeah.
The power coming out of the turns.
Yeah, what's it like when that left tire comes off the ground?
I have coated that left tire a couple of times, but me personally, I would like all four on the ground.
That's what Alan said last week.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just, to me, I feel like I have more control over the car when it's that way, and you can feel that left front toting, don't get me wrong, but my personal opinion, I would rather have all four on the ground, and so I try not to tote that left front too much.
Yeah, Alan said the worst part about that left front coming off the ground is when it hits the ground.
Yeah, going back down is the worst part. Coming up is the easy part, going back down is the worst part.
Right.
Yeah, he's right.
So, Rachel, do you have a website or anything?
No, I'm actually working on trying to get a website up, but I do not have one at this time. So.
Okay, well, when you get one up, you need to get it in touch with us.
Okay,
yeah,
you.
Absolutely.
Now, back to Christy here. Now, the one thing, you know, there's a lot of things about this series that really impresses me. I wish it was closer where we could catch some of these races. We're going to have to try and get up there for a few. But on their website, and you don't see this on any other websites, racetrack series or anything, they've got their mission on their website.
The mission statement.
Their mission statement, but the AMP series goals, one of the final goal on there is to provide racers low cost and travel and expense in order to race. That's something that's totally missing in this sport right now.
Say that again.
To provide racers low cost and travel and expense in order to race.
So, Christy, what prompted you to put this mission statement on your website? Because like Rick says, this is not something that's common.
Well, like you know the history, the late model racing had gotten away from here, and we wanted to be able to provide, you know, racing back to the fans of this state. The Super Late Model Series came in here, and they run, you know, two or three times a year. But other than that, they didn't have a lot of super or late model races here. We putting it all together, you know, giving the show to a cost for the promoters where they can afford it, making it fair for the drivers inside of our state. To be able, I'm sorry, I'm nervous again. For them to be able to race at a cost that it just wouldn't kill them to, you know, that they couldn't come and make it appealing for them. All of it, pulling it together is what made us put the mission statement out there.
That's cool.
That's fantastic.
How many laps are your races normally?
Our heat races are anywhere from 10 to 12, and our feature races are 30 laps usually. We do some 50 laps with Super. We have a topless at Monticello that we run. That's 40 laps. But most of them are 30.
And that's what keeps it economical for these guys and girls.
Right.
We get used to saying that, though.
Guys and girls, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to say guys and girls now. We got Rachel.
Yeah,
so, Rachel, who's your? Do you have some sponsorship?
Yes, I do have some sponsors. I have Marion Performance Racing Engines. I have O.H. Hendrick Sheet Metal. And I have Wood Tree Service and Jet Fast Logistics that are joining me in O.H. So thank all of them for their sponsorship because you can never do it without those guys, for sure.
No doubt about it. Well, Rachel, we wish you the best of luck in 2008. Keep all four wheels on the ground and look for them checkered flags.
I plan to. I hope to see a couple checker flags anyway.
All right.
And Christy, you just keep up the good work, girl.
I will, and if you don't mind, I'd like to give my sponsors a plug.
No doubt. Go ahead.
I'd like to appreciate racewraps.com. They are our official graphics of the series. Blue Ridge Trailers out of Canton, Texas, which is BlueRidgeLiftGate.com. Team GRT, Joe Garrison and Team GRT has been just wonderful to us. Larry Shaw Racing, he's been as well. Mike McNay of doing business as Snap-on Tools. Hoosier Southwest, Smiley's Racing Product, Your Light Racing Wheels, Wolf Pump, William Gould Racing, Race On Driving Experience, and Kenny Morton Racing. And y'all can view anything on our website at www.ampseries.com. And I want to tell Rachel thank you for coming on board with us. We appreciate, you know, you being the first lady in the series. And we're looking forward to your coming on and your racing. And I want to tell all the drivers that are out there listening that has really made me nervous tonight. that I appreciate all of y'all and everything that you've done to help build this series. And if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't exist.
Now, Christy, one, before we go, how did they win this stacker trailer?
They register and run for the points. We got 80%. You have to be in 80% of the points. We'll do a drawing at the 2008 awards banquet. Each night the driver comes, when they pay their entry fee, their name will go into a container to be drawn at the end of the year. If they run 15 races, their name will be able to go in there 15 times. But you have to follow the 80% of the series. And there is the added bonus, and there's a $500 added bonus for those that want to run 100%.
All right.
Well, that's cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you. I've heard that no one has done anything like that before, so I thought it'd be nice. Because we did. We had drivers that ran 100%, and, you know, they left other locations and come and run with me. And, they, you know, I'm not that they could have been somewhere else. I mean, they were totally 100% dedicated to this series, and at the end in results, they should be given a little bit of something.
Loyalty bonus.
There you go. Very good.
Thank you.
Very cool.
Well, ladies, thanks a lot for being on the show with us tonight, and I'm sure we're going to be talking to you again real soon.
Keep them press releases coming.
All right. I certainly appreciate y'all right. and all you've done for us. And we hope that y'all get to come up and catch a race with us.
We'll do our best.
All right.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Very much.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks. All right. Good night. All right, man. Whew.
Now, coming right up next is the replay, or the first, it won't be a replay if you've never heard it, the modified reunion.
All right.
Hour and a half show, and it has interviews with people like
Bug Stevens,
Doug Hebron, sprint car superstar, Ron Bouchard, Chuck Boos, Lou Boyd, oh man, George Summers, Dick Kluth, Bill Harmon, Bill Wimble. Oh my.
Yeah.
It's pretty good stuff. And they're interviewed by Jerry Benner and Carol Wicks and
Phil Shriver.
And talk about three people interviewing their heroes. And that made it really kind of special.
Yeah.
So that's coming up right after this. And I think it's time for us to head on out of here.
We went over a little bit, 2.5 hours in a 3.5 hour show. But it was all great. I want to thank all of our guests tonight. Of course, Valerie Thompson, Neil Armstrong, Jim Hanks, Jeff Choquette, Christy Hudson, Rachel York, Lonnie Rush, and, of course, Marty Little. We'll be back here next Tuesday night. We got anything lined up yet, Jack?
I have no idea.
We'll be smoking it again.
No idea.
Real Racing USA every Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. I'm Rick Andrews along with Jack Smith. Good night now.
That keeps going.